Hey there, dudes and dudettes, and welcome to Tubular Time Machine, the podcast that cranks the nostalgia dial all the way to 11. I'm your host, Jason Raz Rasmussen, and each week we jump into our gnarly retro ride and rocket back to a specific year between 1971 and 2000, reliving the raddest music, movies, TV shows, video games, toys, slang, and pop culture moments that made growing up in the U.S. so totally bodacious. But I'm not flying solo. Every episode features a special co-host who was exactly 14 years old that year, ready to dish on everything from mixtapes and mall food courts to butterfly clips and blowing into NES cartridges like a wizard. So grab your slap bracelet, rewind your cassette, and fire up that Tubular Time Machine theme song, where the past is always rad and the vibes never go out of style. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce my co-host for this episode, someone who keeps our school running like a well-oiled machine and still somehow has the time to be one of the friendliest, most reliable people you'll ever meet. Cliff Wilson is our building manager, but honestly, he's the glue that holds everything together behind the scenes. If a light's out, a pipe bursts, or a classroom door won't budge, Cliff's the guy who's already two steps ahead. But today, we're stepping out of the maintenance wing and into the time machine because back in 1991, Cliff was a 14-year-old with a front row seat to one of the most exciting years in pop culture history. He's got the firsthand stories, the memories, and the deep knowledge of what it really felt like to be a teenager back then. Cliff, welcome to the show. Ready to fire up the Tubular Time Machine and take us back to 1991?
Absolutely.
Excellent, excellent. So give me a little background. How was life back in 1991? We'll get into the weeds here in just a minute, but what were you doing in 1991?
In 1991, I was between Raton, New Mexico and Santa Fe, New Mexico. I went to two different high schools, played football, ran track, did a lot of camping, went to the mall a lot. It wasn't a whole lot to do, but you know, we got through.
So you were one of these sporting types, a 14-year-old football player and track star.
I wasn't too great at football, but I was pretty good at track.
What was your sport of choice in track?
I was a sprinter, so I did 100, 200, and 400.
Oh, that's going to only take me about 50 minutes, 60 minutes over there.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. It sounds like you were in a nice warm area as well, so must have been nice to get out and do some camping and things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always enjoyed that.
That sounds like a great background. Sounds like a lot of fun. And you mentioned the malls. We'll talk more about those later on and things. But what do you think on regards to movies? There were some great, great movies that came out in 1991. At 14 years old, you may or may not have seen them because of the rating R, but there were a couple biggies.
Yes, there was. You had Silence of the Lambs was huge. There was Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I saw that one. Definitely saw that one. That was one of my favorites. Silence of the Lambs was one of my favorites too, but I didn't get to watch that until later in my life.
Did you get to see the Addams Family in the theater?
I don't remember if it was a theater or not, but I did get to see that.
I'm assuming your parents didn't bring you to see Boys in the Hood or JFK in the theater.
No, Boys in the Hood, it was another one I saw later on in life, probably a couple of years later. I think they had us watch that at school, actually. There was a lot of gang affiliation and things at that time going on where I was at. And so that was something that, you know, they definitely wanted the kids to consider.
Interesting. Now, did you get the chance when you were 14 to see Terminator 2?
I did.
I'm jealous. For 14 years old seeing that movie, oh man, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, it was something else at the time because that was great. The special effects were really great in that movie, and they were award winning. In fact, they beat out, I remember plainly, because I thought I watched the Oscars and I thought that Star Trek had done a better job with special effects, but Terminator 2 won that. But yeah, I don't know why I remember that. I just do.
Well, the liquid metal, I mean, that was just an amazing special effect for the time. I mean, that was something that we hadn't seen before, and it was just something that was so cool, and especially as he mutated toward the end.
Yeah, it still is. I mean, that for like you say, for that era, but still for them to be able to, in the way they did it, it was really interesting. So
I'm sad. I've been showing my son all these movies to introduce him to the classics and things. And so we were going through the Terminator, the first one, and we made it probably about halfway. But then there's a scene where the Terminator is doing his surgery in his own arm and things. And he basically freaked out and wouldn't watch anymore. But I so want to get him to T2 because he's 13 right now. And I want to get him to T2 because, you know, like yourself, that's a perfect age to see that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. Cause it's just such an interesting movie and actually now with the rise of AI and everything, it's kind of more relevant than it was at that time.
Oh yeah. I bring up with my students, I bring up Skynet all the time. Say Skynet's come online when AI can replicate AI.
Right.
Yeah. And I think I remember James Cameron actually going recently in an interview saying basically, see, I told you so.
Yeah.
So you said Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Of course, that one produced Bryan Adams' huge hit. You know, the everything I do it for you. That song was everywhere.
Yes, it was. I wasn't even thinking of the song. It's just all the actors in that, they all were pretty big name actors, and at the time not all of them were, but gosh, that was
Morgan Freeman and Alan Rickman and Kevin Costner and who was the female in that one? That was
Elizabeth Mastrantoni.
Ah, yes,
yeah,
Elizabeth Mastrantoni from I always can relate her to The Abyss and things. You also had the heyday of Disney films. You were right in the middle of them when Beauty and the Beast came out that year.
Yeah, I did. I don't know if I saw that at that time or not, but I do remember seeing it. Let's see, what else was there?
Silence of the Lambs, that's a classic. Yeah. Yeah, it still stands up today, no problem.
And like I say, I was a little bit older when I watched that, and that still freaked me out.
As a teen, I would venture to guess Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead was a big one for you.
It was, yeah, with, who was it? That was Christina Applegate, wasn't it?
Yep, Christina Applegate. And the boys on the porch, the scene that I still use the quote today, you know, dishes are done, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's some definite great ones that came out. Did you get to see My Girl and be devastated and traumatized by it forever back then?
Yes. And I'm not sure what age I saw that, but I definitely remember that movie. With Macaulay Culkin.
That was one of those ones that will forever be etched in the brain for being one of the most depressing movies ever.
Yes, absolutely. That was, yeah. Gosh, bringing back memories here. I hadn't thought of that movie in forever. I remembered seeing it, but yeah, that's...
Man, were you a big movie theater person? Did you go to the theaters a lot?
At that age, not a whole lot. Now, as I got older and was able to take myself and things like that, yes. And went to the movie theater at the mall in Santa Fe all the time.
Mall movie theaters, always cramped, always crowded, tiny little theaters.
Yeah. And at that time, that was the big thing to do, was to go see the latest new movie. And they were really good movies.
Nowadays, you can just wait 2 weeks and it'll be streaming on TV and you don't have to go to the theater. Back then it was an event, you know, everybody, your friends and everybody would go together and, you know, see all these things, and you and all your fellow 14-year-old friends went to see Boys in the Hood. Yeah.
Yes. And then you have to wait forever for it to come out on VHS. It seemed like forever.
Back then it was like you'd wait at least 6 months, a minimum of 6 months for anything to come out. Now everything over 3 weeks and you're like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, why isn't this on Amazon Prime yet?
So any other films that you can think of from 91 that really, you know, lit your fire or made you want to be in the theater?
There was so many. There was, well, I mean, you mentioned the big three, that for me anyway, T2, Boys in the Hood, and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
See, others, Adam's Family, like I mentioned earlier, I was a big Christina Ricci fan back then. Cape Fear, the one with Robert De Niro, the remake. I remember being in the theater for Cape Fear. And one of the very few times that I ever like spoke up in a theater, you know, and it was not really rude, but made a joke in the theater, because that one had Robert De Niro. And so Robert De Niro is, you know, following this family basically. And he, at one point, he ties himself under their car and things. And so they're taking the boat out to Cape Fear, And in the theater, I yell out, "He's under the boat!" You know, oh, I got people busting up on that one.
Right? I do remember that. Robert De Niro, I think he was putting out a movie a year or more at that time because he was just such a big name actor.
He's putting out a movie or more nowadays, but you don't hear about 90% of them because they flop usually.
That's true. Yes.
The last big movie from that year, which doesn't get as much recognition as it should, is the original Keanu Reeves film Point Break.
You know, I've never actually seen that one.
Oh my goodness.
I've never seen it. No.
Oh.
That was with him and
Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Swayze, I had relatives that worked for him in New Mexico because he had a ranch out there before he passed away.
Huh. Interesting. That's kind of a fun little site. And you haven't seen the movie? Oh, man.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
You got to be supporting his estate.
I know, right?
There's actually a whole scene in Hot Fuzz, which if you've seen that, which was written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. There's a whole scene in there about how Point Break is one of the greatest and how he fires in the air at the end. And they use part of that in the film.
Yeah, that's something I'll have to go watch. Katie Slickard was one and New Jack City as well. Were both movies. When I watched, I think City Slickers I did see in the theater because it was my dad really liked Billy Crystal.
And that was with Curly, you know, I always use the line, you know, Billy Crystal says, "Hey, you kill anybody yet today, Curly?" And,
yeah.
And he goes, "Day's not over yet."
Yeah. Right.
Jack Palance, yeah. City Slickers is one of those films I'm on the border on if I have to show that one to my son or not, because it's a good film. But I don't know if it's one that he'll be like, "Ooh, I got to see that one," kind of thing.
Right, and it's definitely dated, but it's still funny.
So, if you don't have any more films, we can move on to television at the time, because there were some pretty cool television shows that
were
out in '91. And if you're like everybody else at the time, we were watching these TV shows week to week, and they had the Thursday nights and the Friday nights were always the big TV nights. Did you have a favorite from this time period?
At that time, gosh, probably my favorite was probably Family Matters.
Oh, yeah.
That was what I would watch. That was probably my favorite. And then you had what was it, Home Improvement?
Yeah, Home Improvement came out in 1991. And
yeah,
that was a fun one, especially with the neighbor and things.
Right, Mr. Wilson?
Yeah, Wilson. I was thinking Mr. Wilson, but yeah, Wilson. Mr. Wilson, I think, is from Dennis the Menace, if I remember correctly. Home Improvement, Tim Allen, yeah.
Tim Allen.
No, that was good. We watched Home Improvement a lot in our house.
Yeah, that was a pretty funny show.
What about Family Matters drew you in? Because I was never actually I never really watched Family Matters a lot. So this may be a generational thing, since you are 6 years behind me, which is a lot. Right. What about Family Matters drew you into that one?
Urkel?
Urkel.
Yep, just watching his shenanigans. At the time, I was a pretty goofy 14-year-old, so that was, you know, that was just anything goofy like that just was funny to me.
Did you run around saying, "Did I do that?"
Yeah. Yes, I did.
God. Let's see, some other big ones out that year. Cosby Show was still going strong, which we don't talk about in this podcast.
Right.
Seinfeld was rising in popularity at the time. And I was watching Seinfeld then. That was, to me, that was the water cooler show, because you talked about it the next day.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when I got older, I was watching that. But at the time, I don't even think I was allowed to watch Seinfeld.
Yeah, I was still working at McDonald's in 91, so we would watch it and then talk about it the next day at work.
Yeah, that was a funny show, man. Show about nothing. That was...
Now, on my previous podcast I did for 1988, we talked about Married with Children and having to kind of sneak to watch that show. Did you ever watch Married with Children at 14?
Yeah, but it was another one of those where, it was on late at night. And yeah, you'd have to, or no, it wasn't, not at that time. It wasn't on late at night. But yeah, you, like, if parents weren't home or something, you might get to watch Al Bundy being Al Bundy.
The sad sack.
Yeah. Well, there again, Christina Applegate was the big draw to that show.
Did you have as much of a crush on Christina Applegate as I did back then?
Probably. I think everyone did. I think everybody had a crush on her.
We had Beverly Hills 90210 in 91 too, so there's probably a bunch on there too.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, I had remembered, oh gosh, what was her name?
Shannon Doherty.
Shannon Doherty. I did have a crush on her, but she had been in a show before Beverly Hills 90210 called Our House. It was with Wilford Brimley when that show was on. I never really got into Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah, that one was every once in a while for me kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, TV in that time frame, I mean, honestly, through the middle of the 80s up through the early 90s was pretty much the same shows almost every year, practically. Cheers, Roseanne, Full House, Cosby Show. I mean, all these shows went on for a long time.
Yeah, your sitcoms all, yep. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, that was another one that was on at that time. Will Smith.
My nephew's huge into that show, but I never actually got into it when it was on the air. I think I might have been a little too old, maybe. I don't know. Maybe outside of their looking what their range was and things.
Right. That one, yeah, that was something that was one that I actually didn't get into until I was older.
Any other TV that you can think of back then?
I remember a movie that came out on TNT with Christian Bale. It was Treasure Island. It was with Christian Bale and Charlton Heston. Oh. Charlton Heston played Long John Silver, and that was to this day I think that was the best rendition of Treasure Island that they ever made. And so I really liked that show. In fact, I taped it as a kid because they showed it on TNT several times. I taped it and I would watch that every once in a while when I was that age.
I can't say I've ever heard of that one. That's interesting. And being Christian Bale, I figure that'd be something I'd know in my lexicon, but no.
Right. No, he was probably about 14, 15 when he made it. Yeah, that was one of his first. In fact, it's on, you can buy it on Amazon right now because I bought it off Amazon.
Well, heck yeah. That's one of the reasons that I do this podcast, actually, is because when we talk about these kinds of things, being 14, this was a year that we all came into our own. We really started kind of connecting more to the material. So your connection to Treasure Island, maybe, like I said, I was 6 years ahead of you, whatever. But this is something that interests me because this is why I want to see what you've been watching, what you saw, what the things that drove you at the time. And this sounds like something that I should have seen and I missed somehow.
It was on TNT. I don't think they even made that big of a deal about it or anything like that. Of course, nobody knew who Christian Bale was. Charlton Heston, obviously, but he was getting older. But I really think that it's the best one they ever made.
Yeah, I don't remember the Dark Knight on the ship, but you know, hey. Oh, but I must just disagree. Probably, even though I haven't seen it, Muppet Treasure Island's the go-to for Treasure Island.
Yeah, no doubt.
Tim Curry is, you know, Long John Silver. You can't beat him.
Yeah. Well, the Muppets in general doing anything is always pretty good.
We get cabin fever. So if you're done with TV, we can definitely move on to the music of the time. And I know that it sounds like you were big into, you know, 90s, early 90s rock.
And I was.
Yeah. What were your go-to bands at the time?
At the time, I was really into Metallica, AC/DC, you know, rock. And then, of course, country was always just prolific at that time, like George Strait and some of those guys. That was really big in my family. I was kind of the black sheep, and I liked rock instead.
So they were a little bit country, you were a little bit rock and roll?
Yes, yes. Of course, you know, we can meet on Johnny Cash, but
I mean, we had, like you said, Metallica and AC/DC obviously had some taste. And Metallica back in 90, right in around 90, was still seen as like, oh, heavy metal, you know, like really the hard and rough stuff. Because I was a big fan of Metallica in the 90s.
Yeah, well, 91 with Metallica was the year they played Moscow.
Oh, yeah. And
they had that, you know, however, 1.5 million or whatever it was, people at the show. It was just, you can watch YouTube clips of that. Oh, it's just crazy because that was still Cold War era, and you had Russians out there waving the American flag and stuff. And it's still interesting to watch knowing that background, the Cold War and stuff.
Was that the big concert or was that specific to Metallica? Because that was a big concert.
That was the big concert, but they were the draw. Metallica was the draw.
I had my parents buy the pay-per-view on that one because I remember Gorky Park playing, Metallica. There were a bunch of big bands there at the time. But yeah, like you said, Metallica was the go-to.
Yeah.
The goat. And like I said, Metallica back then, at least, was still kind of the a little bit of the fringe saw is too heavy. And this is right at the time that they were the height of their awesomeness, you know, with Master of Puppets and Ride the Lightning. And we had Injustice for All come out by then. Do you remember?
Yes. Yes. In fact, that I think 91 is the year. No, 91 is the year the Black Album came out, but it's close to it. So they had already done Injustice for All.
Let's see, I worked in the music store from 92 to 94, I think, and Black Album came out then. So somewhere between 92 and 94.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was a big one too. But yeah, this is back when they had Jason Newsted still, so I still liked them. Mm-hmm. Nowadays they've kind of gone downhill because Newsted was important. And I mean, when you got a bassist named Jason, you know, it's like you gotta, you know.
Well, you know, they had Cliff Burton before that. And so, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, but I got to see Metallica twice in concert. Once I was fourth row. And it was hilarious because at this point in time, I had my head, you know, shaved down like I normally do. And so I was up near the fourth row there, list cranking it out and head banging like a maniac and stuff. People looking like I'm weird because I had no hair. And the next day, I could not move my neck left or right very well.
Oh yeah, been there, done that.
Did you have long hair around then?
I did not. I had actually pretty short hair because my dad was a cop, so I wasn't allowed to do a lot of things that were like seen as rebellious. So I didn't start growing my hair out until late '90s, under the influence of grunge bands.
And '91 was the rise of grunge.
It was. Yeah, Nirvana came out. Soundgarden's first album was that year, I think.
Right around there, yeah.
Huh. Yeah, so you had big names, Chris Cornell and
Eddie Vedder.
Eddie Vedder, yes. Pearl Jam came out then, too. And Kurt Cobain, yep.
It was such a short-lived style, unfortunately. Because, I mean, it was pretty much Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains. Who else was the biggies of that? Oh, Nirvana, obviously.
Yeah, but yeah, big names would be, yeah, and definitely Nirvana, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, yeah, Eddie Vedder's band.
Pearl Jam.
Yeah, Pearl Jam. See, this is what happens when you get older, guys. You draw blanks. And...
That's okay. You know, music is one of the things that actually sticks in our head, even if dementia or Alzheimer's sets in. Music is one of those things that actually still, you know, comes around. So you're saying, in regards to this, you were a fan of rock and roll and you were a fan of grunge, two great categories. So you weren't a fan of Nelson Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection? Is that what you're saying?
Right. That is correct. But yeah. I did like that Bryan Adams song.
Yep. Bryan Adams is number one. Yeah. Everything I do it for you. Yeah.
I did like that one.
And play it again and again and again and again. Nirvana's Nevermind came out in 91. Yeah, that album was just massive.
It was huge. Oh, REM, yeah. REM too. They came out with an album that year. They were big.
Oh yeah, the Losing My Religion album. Oh, that was a big one. I remember still selling that like crazy when I worked at the music store.
Yep, that one was, yeah, that they were at that time probably one of my favorite bands around then. Yeah,
I think the hair bands were on the way out by the early 90s.
They were, and they were, by that time, they were starting to get a little annoying. Guns N' Roses came out with an album, two albums that year, 91.
Oh, yeah, that was Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, right?
Yeah. I still like those.
I remember when I worked at McDonald's, I had actually gotten a driver's license, you know, and I was only whatever it was, 17, 18, whatever. I'd gotten a driver's license, but it was an adult driver's license, you know, because they have different pictures and stuff. But I never drank or anything like that. You know, I worked the grave shifts at McDonald's, and there's a whole point to this. I worked the grave shifts at McDonald's, and actually we would go out and shoot pool every night after work. And okay. The reason I say this is because Use Your Illusion, what I can't remember if it was one or two, had a song on there called Ode to Tipper Gore. And Tipper Gore was trying to censor music like crazy back then.
Right.
And so every time I was at the pool hall, I'd always play the Ode to Tipper Gore because it was just cursing all over the place. Yeah. So I don't know. It was just my way of being a smart aleck. They didn't catch on that I was not adult for months, you know, until finally somebody really looked closely at the ID, which is the birthday was correct. And they're like, you can't come in here. I'm like, I don't drink. And they're like, and they're, you can't come in here. So that ended that, unfortunately. No more Ode to Tipper Gore.
Yep. In fact, I watched something that they talked about where they talked about that whole situation. And yeah, that was wild.
With Tipper Gore?
With Tipper Gore, yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to get things banned. And she, you know, they did get things labeled. But because that was always the big thing as a kid, you'd want to buy those albums with the parental advisory on there because they were the good albums, you know.
Putting that sticker on there made them more desirable. Explicit lyrics, you know, it made them more desirable.
Defeated the purpose.
Exactly. Hey, the artists were like, hey, put a sticker on mine.
Exactly. But what can we do? Get a sticker.
I can see Michael Bolton saying, put a sticker on mine.
Right.
Oh, my. Okay. Any other experiences? Did you go to any concerts when you were 14 or?
Not at that age. No.
Yeah.
Growing up in Santa Fe, being in that age in Santa Fe is still an expensive place to live. So there was not a lot that we got to go out and do.
I think 14 probably is a little young in most cases. The only concert I ever remember when I was like that young of a teenager, what my parents brought us to, which is the first concert I ever went to live, I think was in California. So I was maybe 13 to see the Bee Gees.
Okay.
But around 91, actually, I think probably around 91 was the first concert I ever paid to go see myself with a friend and things. And that was a fantastic concert, Billy Idol with Faith No More, who became my favorite band of the time.
Awesome. Billy Idol, man. Yeah.
Halfway through the concert, they had this above the stage. They had this giant fist, you know, how Billy Idol always raises his fist. So this giant fist. And then halfway through one of the songs, the fist starts turning over upside down. And then just this giant middle finger comes up and flips off the crowd.
Yeah, he was at the time. Yeah, he was kind of a shock rocker.
That was one of those shows that will forever be etched in my mind, not only because of just being able to go to a concert on my own with friends and things, but it just because it's Billy Idol. I mean, it was a great show.
Yeah, absolutely.
I gained 100% love of Faith No More, and they were my favorite band for many years after that.
Right.
Yeah.
My first concert probably wasn't till that I went to by myself. Probably it wasn't until I was older, but I went to go see, I did get to go see Metallica in Albuquerque.
Metallica Live is a fantastic show.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't show you the mosh pit though. I wandered down there and regretted it.
Yeah. You did a mosh pit and regretted it. Did you fall down?
I did not, but I was sore afterwards.
Yeah.
And I played football at the time, and I did a lot of strength training at that time. And you know, that was still a lot for me.
My mosh pit experience was actually, and you're going to laugh at this because it's right around this time frame too, Pearl Jam.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
Pearl Jam had a mosh pit. And so I was in there, but then I started falling down. And thankfully, my best friend, he pulled me up and things. And so that's always one of those stories that, you know, it's a mosh pit at Pearl Jam. Not really a group you'd think of moshing to.
No, but I could definitely see it happening because, yeah, that'd be... I mean, some of Pearl Jam's music is pretty, you know, you could mosh to it. That's for sure.
So with TV, I mean, sorry, with TV, with music, was there anything else you wanted to bring up in regards to music that I missed or that you have a fond memory of?
Not that I can think of. Yeah, as a kid at that age, I was pretty limited by parental.
You couldn't be a bad boy.
Yeah, especially with my dad being a police officer, you know.
I want to see pictures of Cliff with long hair, though.
Oh gosh, you'd have to go to probably about 95 to see that, and I never grew it that long.
I grew mine out during COVID, and I grew mine out years ago, and actually donated it to Locks of Love back then in memory of a friend of mine who passed.
Okay.
So that being the case, it sounds like from our previous conversation that video games weren't really your thing.
Well, they were, but I wasn't the loud seat. See, my parents were on Tipper Gore side.
So
there was a lot of things, and plus they thought it would take me away from my school work and things like that. And so they just didn't, you know, really allow me to do a lot of video games. Now, video games at the mall, a whole other story. I'd go in there with rolls and rolls of quarters and you know, play all kinds of games. But as far as having like my own Nintendo or anything like that, I was not allowed to have that.
You had some of my favorites in the arcade in 91 of arcade game, because I was probably still going to arcades then too.
Right.
But you had the four person games were some of the big ones at the time.
Yeah. And I can't remember if like Mortal Kombat was out at that time or if that was later.
I think the first Mortal Kombat had come out, but Street Fighter was still kind of the way to go.
Yes, it was. That was a huge game. In fact, when I finally got my own console, that was one of the first games I bought. Was
nice. Do you remember which character is your favorite to play?
Guile.
Oh yeah. So you were a kicker.
Yeah. I was, well, see. People always told me I looked like Guile, so I would play Guile.
I hope that's not the case, because I always played Chun-Li, and if that's the case, I'm really in trouble. The Simpsons arcade game was big in 91, so you could play any of the Simpsons. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time was big.
I think I played that one, but mainly I can't even remember the name, but there was a shooter game that I really liked. You know, because arcades then you'd have the detachable gun, and you could play. You know, there was, I don't remember if it was an Aliens game. There was a couple of them.
There were two big ones that I can remember, and the first one was right in line with the movie. So Terminator 2: Judgment Day was a big one.
That could have been it.
That one was fun as heck, but they had the little Uzi, I think, up on the on the thing, so you didn't have the detachable. But the other, right. I think, might have been Time Killers. I might be wrong on that one, though.
Possibly. I remember both of those, and I played those a lot. I can't remember at that time what would have been in the mall at the mall in Santa Fe, because that was a. But yeah, you'd go over there and yeah, you go with your friends play Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter against each other, and it was a whole lot different experience than playing it at home on your console.
Well, I think also, and it's hard to compare then and now, because obviously things have changed drastically since then. But just being there, standing next to your friend, and basically, being the "I'm gonna win, I'm gonna kick your butt," right next to him kind of thing, is a little different experience than kids these days with the headphones on and calling out their mamas and stuff like that.
Right, and then you'd have a crowd watching you play. If you were good at the game, you could have a crowd watching you play it.
Oh heck yeah, those were some of the best times when you're actually good at something. There was one game out, Tank Busters or something like that. I can't remember what the name of the darn thing was. I was really good at that one. So yeah, every once in a while I'd get a little crowd.
I'm watching you. Yep. See, Galaga, I got really good at Galaga. Galaga was around. Gosh, Galaga's still around.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one that I had gotten really good at. And, you have people waiting behind you to play it, and they're like, come on, are you going to,
And if you're like me right now, you can imagine automatically the sound effects of the ships dropping on the screen.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was a different time, and that's one of the things that's great about this, because I wish arcades would be something still in a way, because they're here and there, but generally speaking, it was an experience. It was so much more than just sitting on the couch playing a game.
Yeah, it was. It really was. I mean, you burned through money.
Well, but how much less money do you spend than on a $60 game these days?
That's true. Yeah.
I love the arcade.
Oh, yeah.
Were you a comic book person at all?
I was not. Yeah. I wasn't. Until I got married and had kids, I really didn't. And then you had the rise of Marvel movies. I really never really had thought about them that much. I was more of a guy. Like I said, I was really into outdoor stuff, camping and that kind of stuff. And so,
but there's sun outside; it melts you.
Right, exactly.
I'll just give some quick recognitions for comic books of 1991, because there's some biggies. The Infinity Gauntlet. So what we based the Infinity Wars on here lately, you know, the Infinity Gauntlet came out then, featuring Thanos, Deadpool's first appearance in the New Mutants.
Yeah, there was that 91?
Yeah. First time. Todd McFarlane and Spider-Man. Look at that. Guardians of the Galaxy started in 1990, but started getting more of a following in 91.
Sure.
So, some biggies, you know, just for quick recognition on those.
Well, do you remember the band Monster Magnet? I think their first album was like 96. One of their entire albums is kind of inspired by Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that it got, you know, for them, it got really, they had quite the, Guardians of the Galaxy had quite the following. That's my favorite. Of the movies that Marvel's put out, those are probably my favorite now.
That's always kind of the funny ones too, because nobody knew what Guardians of the Galaxy was before it came out. Like, what the heck is this? And then, yeah, it turned out great.
Yeah, it did. It really did.
So, not a comic book person. That's okay. That's why we have so many categories we can cover. How about toys of 1991? You're 14, so you're probably getting to the point to where toys might be a little. You know, you might be a little old for toys, but that doesn't mean you didn't get to play with any of them.
Well, one thing, some toys that I really still like are Legos, and they were huge.
Legos in 91 actually was the first years that the Lego Technics came out, so they're a little bit more advanced, a little bit more adult, I guess, in some cases.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You can build all kinds of stuff with it. Toys, cars, helicopters, all kinds of stuff.
You can get a set that's you know, a fancy set for $500.
Yeah.
You know, I love Legos, but $500 price line, not necessarily in an educator's budget.
They weren't quite that expensive back then, but they were still pricey. I mean, you'd say, hey, that's a pretty cool castle or whatever, you know. Well, that's, you know, the price tag was still pretty high.
There's a fun one that came out in 1991, the Nintendo Power Glove.
I remember that didn't go very far.
Nope. It's still around today as a collector's item, but it had lots of problems, and it was not very friendly.
No. I mean, one game that I would always play as a kid was Duck Hunt.
Oh, love Duck Hunt.
Oh, yeah. It was great. It was great. My dad even liked that because, you know, being a cop, he really.
Hopefully he remembered to replace his revolver with the Nintendo gun.
Yeah.
Get home, relax.
No, that was actually one you could still play in the arcade at that time. And you'd get a shotgun instead of a little handgun from the Nintendo. And so when we'd go to watch a movie or whatever, he'd make sure to go play Duck Hunt.
Duck Hunt was one of those classics that's will always be in the video game lexicon of history.
Yes, it will.
Super Soaker 50 came out in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any water guns?
I did. I had, I think, I don't know if I had a Super Soaker at that time or if I had already broken it. I had a little electric water gun that I'd run around and pull pranks on people with and whatever else. But yeah, that was before you had the little orange things on the end of the things, and this thing looked like an Uzi or a Mac 10, and it kind of freaked people out at how.
We touched briefly on that in my 1988 podcast, but I had back then the Megatron Transformer, which back then looked like a pistol. You know, nowadays, right. Like you said, if it didn't have that orange on it, it would look like a pistol. So I'm sure Someone would, you know, get shot over it.
Right, exactly. And yeah, sadly, that kind of thing happened.
Yeah, but back then we didn't care. We faked it. We had fun. And
right.
Yeah. Of course, putting an electric source together with a water source, I don't know if that's such a good idea with a water gun.
Well, it worked out okay until the thing just, you know, finally died.
So you're basically saying that all your toys, you just broke all your toys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Your parents worked hard for those.
We were rough on them at that time. I mean, it was, you were outside doing everything outside. You weren't... If they caught you inside and you weren't working on schoolwork, it was, what are you doing? Kind of.
Shoot. Years before this, I remember living in Ohio. And in Ohio, our house was close to some railroad tracks down near the bottom of the hill in our area. So we'd go play by the railroad tracks, but like there were hobos and things down there.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Very different world today.
Absolutely.
Got to coddle our snowflakes.
Well, in some ways, that's better.
Yeah, some ways.
I definitely remember micro machines, troll dolls. I got a story I could tell about troll dolls.
Go for it.
It was troll dolls. We found one when I got older. Of course, you know, they were a big deal. Yeah, throughout the 90s. And when I got older, I was helping a friend move. We'd get in this storage unit and pull out all these toys that they had, and we took troll dolls and glued them on my truck for some odd reason. And then we drove around town being goofy with the troll dolls stuck to my
glued them to your truck.
Yeah. And so this friend of mine, he ended up becoming an Army Ranger. So he's telling me a story about something he did, PSYOP stuff, going through Baghdad in his Humvee with troll dolls. His Humvee, blaring the same song we've been blaring, you know, running around the little town we were in. And so that was pretty funny. But he thought it was so funny that that's what he did in Baghdad.
Probably some very confused Iraqis too.
Yes, yes. Well, that was probably his point. Yeah.
Don't attack that truck. They're crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, golly. I love it. So, if there's no other toys, we can move on to commercials and advertising, because you had really good commercial that year.
Oh, yeah. You had all kinds of stuff. Back then, you had the Pepsi Sandy Crawford commercials, definitely.
That one was great. Yeah, I think wasn't that the little girl that turned into Cindy Crawford or something?
I don't remember exactly. Yeah, that was because that Super Bowl, all those Super Bowl commercials, and then they would run those all year or they start a whole ad campaign over them.
Well, it's funny to think that back then, like Cindy Crawford and all these Sports Illustrated models were like the be all end all of advertising. Yeah. They were everywhere.
You had her and what was her name? Kathy Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think around that time, Kathy Ireland had already come out with her clothing line at Kmart.
I was big on Claudia Schiffer back then.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
There's Be Like Mike came out for Gatorade in 91. McDonald's. Again, I was working at McDonald's at the time. So that's when the McLean came out. You know, it was like a leaner burger. But you'd have the fresh tomato, the fresh lettuce and all that. And then you'd fold it together into your own sandwich.
Yep. No, I remember the McLean because when I worked at McDonald's, they was still around, and we had a customer, and I don't really know why I remember this, but we had a customer that would come through probably once a day and order. And the McLean, he'd have the same order, but he always wanted mayonnaise on the McLean. And I would think to myself, well, what's the point of getting the McLean if you're getting mayonnaise?
That's okay. That's the guys that come in and order the large combo with a Diet Coke.
Uh-huh. Well, that's me. That's what I do. I still do that.
See, working at McDonald's in 91, that's probably about the time that we had the McDonald's tacos and fajitas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep, that was they were actually darn good back for the time. Yeah. But it's also the time I'm always proud of beating my chest on this one, is that's about the time that the breakfast burrito started coming out too.
Okay. See, I don't remember them having Mexican food. Because
it might have been a limited market.
Okay. It could have been because, see, I was in New Mexico, so they might not have even tried it, because Mexican food down there is so huge. They might not have even considered, because Taco Bell didn't do well in New Mexico.
I wonder why. Real food?
Real stuff, yeah.
Those are some of the big commercials. Any others that you think of?
Well, I mean, the ones I really remember, the Budweiser commercials, but I don't think those came out till later. You know,
from Budweiser back at that time were some of the best, because they always had the best Super Bowl commercials.
They did. You had the ones with the frogs, and then you had the What's Up.
Right. Speaking of that, actually, moving forward in the slang terms, What's Up is huge. Everybody said that.
It was, yeah. Yeah.
What's Up?
Yeah, all the California raisins, the dancing little raisins, those were a big deal.
We talked about them in the 88 podcast, and actually they came around before even 88, so the California raisins lasted forever.
They did. Yep, they did.
They really, really wanted to sell those raisins.
Yeah. 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 And then they just, you could still get them, but yeah, they just stopped advertising.
So for slang terms in the time, some of the big ones there were fat, you know,
mm-hmm.
cool, yep. You know, with the pH. And word is huge.
Word up.
Word yep. to your mother.
Yeah. Yes.
And then, talk to the hand.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is also Wayne's World, came out in 91, and so Knot was big.
Yeah, it was. No, Knot was like huge. And then something we'd always say was burn, you know, if you made fun of somebody and they got embarrassed or whatever. Oh, burn, you burned him.
Yeah, burn, yep. I remember burn. We had Booyah.
Yeah, Booyah, just, yep.
All in the time before Cyborg.
Booyah, yeah, that was big playing football.
Yeah,
Booyah, yeah.
Wasn't, oh God, what's the football player? There was a football player that was popular during the time that actually would say that in commercials, I think. I can't think of the guy's name. I was never big into sports, but it was popular. Bo Jackson, maybe?
It could have been. Yeah, you had Bo Jackson. That was real popular. Gosh, you had really great football players back then.
And the last big slang I have at the time was all that and a bag of chips.
Uh-huh. Yep. He thinks he's all that and a bag of chips. Yep.
Oh, man. The you know, and we give grief to the kids today, you know, for their language. But when you're talking about using what's up. You know,
uh-huh. Well, what you can do is give him what's that guy's name? Pauly Shore.
Oh, yeah.
Pauly Shore. Yeah, have the kids watch Pauly Shore movies and see all the slang he used from that time.
The weasel.
Yeah, whiz the juice and all the other stuff he'd say.
My sister kissed Pauly Shore back then. We were at a comedy show up at the Air Force Academy, and so she ended up going backstage and kissing him.
Wow. He was quite the character, man.
I think last year I was up at the Comic-Con in Utah with a friend of mine. We were having breakfast at the hotel that all the celebs were sitting at. And so Pauly Shore was 10 feet from me, kind of thing.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I always, a lot of people didn't like his movies or his comedy. I always did. I always thought
he was. I mean, they had the great, you had Biodome, Son-in-Law, Jury Duty, In the Army Now.
Yeah, that was he was a pretty funny guy.
Celebrities in 1991, you know, you said you didn't see Point Break, but Keanu Reeves was on the rise. He was a starting mm-hmm. name, because when people first heard his name, they're like, Keanu, what kind of name is that?
Yeah.
But Point Break, it kind of really kind of started to make him turn more into a star and celebrity.
Right. Yeah, that was at that time too. See, living in Santa Fe, there's a lot of, for whatever reason, it's a draw to celebrities. So you had people like Oprah Winfrey and all kinds of people living out there, and a couple of the guys that I went to high school with worked for, or their parents worked for. He played I can't remember his name, and I should, because it was on the tip of my tongue just a minute ago. He played Green Goblin in the Spider-Man movie.
Willem Dafoe.
Yes, Willem Dafoe. Yes. Yes, they worked for him. And so I got in my annual from 91-92 school year, one of my friends is there with Willem Dafoe.
Huh, that's cool. Yeah. Is Val Kilmer's estate out there?
It was, yes. He had a place out there. Who else? Ted Turner had a place out there. I mean, it's loaded with a lot of those big celebrities from the 90s had places out there.
Interesting.
Prince, Michael Jackson had a place out there.
I need to go down there and check it out.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Yeah, if you've never been down there, I mean, everything down there is expensive.
So, Keanu Reeves, like I said, got big. Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, you know, we definitely had a rise from Nevermind. Will Smith was on the rise, from Fresh Prince. Crazy to think how far Will Smith came, and then flapped himself out of popularity for a little bit here. Yeah. Bart Simpson was huge, you know, Bart Mania. I think I had the Bart or the Simpsons cassette. I think Pizza Hut sold that thing. So there was a Pizza Hut cassette that had music from the Simpsons that they made specifically for it.
Right.
Whitney Houston's Star Spangled Banner, one of the most epic Star Spangled Banners ever. And of course, I know you, with your big background in rock, you were a secret closet fan of Vanilla Ice in 1990.
Oh yeah, you know, for some reason, I actually really got into that song.
Oh my goodness.
He's one hit wonder there. I mean, it was just, I don't know. He had the song that Queen did that was, that he basically ripped the... off
under pressure.
Yep.
Goodness. I can edit this part out so I can use it for blackmail in the future that says you actually enjoyed Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice. Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
So those were some of the big celebs at the time. Mark Wahlberg was also on the rise, but he was still a singer with Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Right. See, and I remember them because I think a lot of especially the girls at school really liked Marky Mark.
Yeah, he's a subpar actor these days. He gets a lot of movies, but I don't remember very many actually like him in. So you're a rock and roller, a football player, and all that kind of stuff. What kind of stuff were you wearing in 1991?
Baggy jeans, Doc Martens. Those were the big things. Of course, Reebok too. But Doc Martens would be what you wore every day, right?
Yeah.
And your Reeboks were something you'd wear if you were playing basketball or walking through the mall or whatever.
I think Doc Martens and grunge were kind of synonymous with each other.
They were. But yeah, Doc Martens had kind of started taking off right before grunge really hit. And so, down there, they kind of had their own style in New Mexico. So you'd get a lot of like Western stuff. I mean, it was like really prolific. A lot of people would make fun of you when you were wearing stuff that was kind of in fashion or whatever. So they laugh at your Doc Martens and tell you wearing platform shoes or something like that. But I like them. Still like them.
I'm looking at my list that I gave here, and one of them is starter jackets, the sports, gear jackets. I had a San Jose Sharks jacket then.
Okay. I remember those. I never had one, but I remember. I definitely remember those because, yeah, they were huge. You were the cool kid that had one.
Yep, exactly. They were pretty darn cool jackets, too, but they were. I wonder if they're still in business these days.
I don't know. I mean, Starters definitely got to be around still, but yeah, I think they were able to pull that off because they look so much like Letterman jackets, and you know, Starter, I think they still make those Letterman jackets for schools.
It could be. I'll take a look after we're done here and see. Yeah, maybe I'll get one and bring it into school. For me, during this time frame, I was one of those ones wearing flannel shirts. So I got pictures of me working in the music store, and then I'd be wearing flannel. And I'd have underneath that, I had a turtleneck that I'd wear underneath the flannel.
Yeah. Turtlenecks were huge back then. We'd always wear them like under our football uniform. So you'd have you'd be wearing your football uniform and you'd have your turtleneck so you looked nice for the game, you know.
You wear a gold chain too?
I never did. No, I never did. That was something I just never got into for some reason.
So now I'm picturing in my head a 1991 Cliff wearing Doc Martens and baggy jeans, you know, yeah, and a turtleneck, and yep, this is all coming together now.
Yeah. You had, what were the popular, Z Cavricci? Those were the popular pants. And I don't know if they made jeans or not, but they had kind of like dress pant kind of thing. And you'd have all these kids looking like they were from the 1950s wearing these Z Cavricci pants and their dress shoes. And
oh goodness. And parents having to say to themselves, why am I paying for this?
Uh-huh. Exactly. Cause yeah, that was, well, 80s is what kind of started the rise with fashion like that, where, you know, you get the stuff that was really expensive marketed to kids, younger, well, not even necessarily marketed to kids, but younger people. And so, yeah. Yeah. On to the 90s. And then you know, that's when your Jordans started coming out and your, yeah, real expensive shoes. And before that, gosh, you had Converse and cowboy boots, and that was about it.
Well, you see these kids walking around the hallways now, they carry around an extra pair of shoes, and you look right at them and they're like the Reeboks or the Nikes or whatever, and those shoes are like $300, $400, $500 each.
Yeah.
It
blows
my mind. Yeah,
it does.
I think I had the New Balance that I got at the PX because it was the cheap stuff.
Yeah, and they're great shoes. Comfy. Yep. Comfy.
So we got the fashion out of the area. We got the fashion through. One more big category here at least, and then if you want, we can talk about a couple of news stories, but I'm not as much into the news on this podcast, but there were some big things that went on 91. You talked earlier about going to the arcade and the mall and things. What was your hangout outside of the arcade at the mall? Where was your favorite place to go in the mall back then?
In the mall? Oh, it would have been the arcade or Orange Julius.
Orange Julius. Yeah. $1, you could get yourself a nice orange drink and hang out for a long time.
Yep. Yep. And at the mall that I would go to, you had movie theater, food court, arcade. So you could walk into the food court, get yourself food, then go to the movie, then come out and play video games. And that's pretty much how the night would go.
That's a perfect night right there.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, other than that, you know, there was a lot of bike riding, there was a lot of hiking, there was backpacking, all kinds of stuff to do. You just have to make your own fun back then.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing. Actually, one of the reasons I do the podcast too is that we don't realize that life has changed so much since our childhoods. And every parent's going to say that things have changed so much. But back then, like you said, you'd go hang outside with friends. You'd go be imaginative and play with your toys or create games for yourselves that you would play. And, you know, in the arcade was kind of the one exception to the rule, to where there's something there in front of your face, but you didn't have the cell phones. You didn't have the things that you didn't have to use your imagination on. You didn't have streaming TV. So you'd go out and do things. And this is just a huge thing that has gone by the wayside in many cases.
Yeah. And sadly, you know,
because that's there's a lot of things that being outside thinking and stuff like that, it sparks a creativity. And not that other things don't, but that's,
it was huge to be able to do that, going over to a friend's house and just hanging out and not being text, or being at a friend's house even today and not sitting 2 feet from each other staring at phones.
Right. Which is weird.
Yeah. I'm guilty of wasting time on my phone, but I actually cut back significantly compared to what I used to be. And so now I really skim and every once in a while I'll respond. But yeah, I would waste time on the phone before, and then I got off for 9 months and it was good. You know, I was doing other things, but I mean, I got back on there.
Right. Yeah. You definitely, I mean, once you start getting that, your dopamine fix from the phone, you've got to detox, man. I know that feeling. I know where that goes.
100%. So last categories I have here, we can just briefly zip over if you want, but, and we don't even have to use them in this if you don't like to. But news stories that year at 14, you probably wouldn't have been paying a huge amount of attention to the news, but there were a few big things.
Yeah, there was some really huge stuff. No, I was actually, because I was always interested in history and current events, even as a kid.
I knew there was a reason I liked you.
That was, in fact, before you called, I was sitting here watching a little documentary on the battle axes of the Neolithic, man.
Oh, you know, a typical Saturday or typical Sunday viewing. Yeah.
Geek out on this history stuff.
For our history at this point in time, or 1991, Operation Desert Storm began. Mm-hmm. Yes, we went to Iraq in Kuwait. Soviet Union, it was dismantled, dissolved. Yeah. That's a big one. I'm talking about that with my classes right now.
I remember watching that coup on TV when they're pulling the tanks up to the Kremlin.
The Rodney King beating.
Yeah.
You know, everybody using Rodney King as their platform, which is, you know, fine. Jeffrey Dahmer was arrested. Oh boy.
Clarence Thomas, is he here? Yep.
Magic Johnson, HIV. Death of Freddie Mercury, that was a sad one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Although in 1991, and I hate to admit this, but in 91, I was not a fan of Queen. It took me a long time to actually become a fan of Queen. And my switching point on that one was the game Guitar Hero. And when I played Guitar Hero, I realized how crazy difficult the actual guitar work is from Queen.
Yeah.
And then I gained a whole new appreciation. And now I absolutely love them. But back in 91, I was not a fan.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of Queen even to this day, but yeah, I definitely respect their musical ability for sure.
Let's see, Super Nintendo launched in the United States.
Was that 91?
Yeah, 91, August 23rd, 1991.
Oh gosh, that's
Super Nintendo though, but that was so much better than Nintendo because it had so much more power.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Everyone does that. And let's see. Start of the Yugoslav wars doesn't have much relevance here, but I ended up working in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Did you?
And so I'm connected to those, but that's neither here nor there. World Wide Web went public in August 6,
1991. Huh. Oh, wow. Huh. Yeah, it didn't start getting big until like 94.
I was one of the very first on Facebook back when it was still, you had to have a college account to be able to log on to Facebook.
Yep, I remember that.
Interesting. Laser eye surgery began experimental approval in 1991.
Yes. My uncle was one of the first ones to get that done.
Huh.
I think it was like 92-ish, somewhere in there.
That's cool. Yeah. I love mine. I got mine after I came back from working in Iraq, and I've got 20/15 vision, I think it is, for distance. Oh yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Now, see, I went recently to go get to see if I was a candidate, and my astigmatism is too bad for that, so I can't even do that now. They said I could do something else, but it's, so that surgery kind of freaks me out because they want to put it, they implantable contact lens, no thank you. I don't know about that.
I think it's right up there with poke you in the eye with a sharp stick.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I think basically on the news and all that kind of stuff, we've really kind of come to an end of the 1991 time period. Was there anything else that we kind of missed in your experience being 14 years old in 1991 that, you know, it could be anything, could be sports, could be anything to do with life in 1991 that I did not touch on?
Not real. There was, you know, at that time, after the Soviet Union started falling and stuff like that, there was a lot more kind of, it was more hopeful, I think.
Yeah, that time. I agree. Yeah, we definitely changed our lifestyles. You know, it's still going to be another 20 years until, you know, 2001, you know, for September 11th and stuff. But yeah, I think you're right. It was the end of the Cold War, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. End of the Cold War. And so there was kind of like there's more optimism, I think, than there had been previously.
Yeah, I like that positive spin or positive outlook on it.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I tell my students today, I said, I don't think we ever actually ended the Cold War, but at least we had a brief pause in the fear of it, I guess.
Yeah, we're not so afraid of nukes for a while.
Should have been, but, you know, hey, once Russia split up, it was a little bit less.
Yeah, but that's when they started floating around everywhere, or that was our fear.
Interesting. Well, Cliff, I must say it's been a pleasure talking with you on all this stuff. I really got a good insight into both you and also your life as a 14-year-old, which is, again, I've said it once, I'll say it 100 times, the point of this podcast, because just that 6 years split between you and I being 14 is something you had some major things going on with, you know, rock and roll and grunge and life in general kind of thing. So this 6-year split is not something to be scoffed at or just looked at like, you know, like it didn't happen. It's just a matter of learning what your experience was. So yeah. I absolutely 100% appreciate your time on this podcast. It's been fantastic getting to know you more. And I am glad that you are my second guest.
Hey, I am glad I was too.
Well, that being said, I'll see you tomorrow, tomorrow morning at work. But on this note, I'm going to go ahead and sign off, and we'll chat afterwards. So just hang around for a couple of minutes.
All right, will do.
Okay, so cowabunga, time travelers, that's going to do it for this ride in the Tubular Time Machine. Thanks for cruising back through the raddest years with us. We hope you had as much fun as we did, cranking up the nostalgia, reliving those gnarly tunes, iconic movies, epic video games, and all the pop culture goodness that made growing up totally awesome. Major shout out and mondo thanks to Cliff for another righteous trip down memory lane. Your stories and vibes made this retro journey even more bodacious. Want to keep the party going? Hit us up on social media. We're talking Facebook, Instagram, and maybe even a little MySpace just for the LOLs. And don't forget to cruise over to TubularTimeMachine.com, where you can catch past episodes, send us your memories, or suggest a year you want us to fire up in the flux capacitor for next time. And hey, if you're digging the ride and want to help us keep this retro machine rolling, head over to buymeacoffee.com/MrRaz. Your support helps fuel future episodes and keeps the good vibes alive. Until next time, keep your mixtapes fresh, your VHS rewound, and your vibes totally tubular. Catch you on the flip side, dude and dudettes.
Hey there, dude and dudettes. It's time to rewind from neon nights to that vintage vibe.
Mixtapes, arcades, butterfly clips.
We're cruising the past with totally rad tips.
Break it up.